Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I was listening to the music so much, I forgot where I was. This Chuck Berry, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't get any more classic than that. Right, Joan Pride?
Doesn't get any older than that either.
That you got to admit, that's one of the classics. That's one of the great rock and roll songs that helped to usher in an incredible era. Don't you agree?
It's also called an old chestnut.
It certainly is, and it's one of my favorites. One of those roasted chestnuts, I think, Joan.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Hi, Joan. Welcome back.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm great. You're just so excited to be here, aren't you?
I'm having a ball.
It is like a dream come true. You're just having to pinch
exactly.
yourself.
You say that every week now. That's
is
so
it getting,
funny.
Is it getting old, Joan?
No, never.
Never. Not my humor, right?
No.
Joan, what's the news in the Kiplinger letter this week? We're going to talk about China first?
We're going to talk about China.
Tell us about
China.
Well,
you know, we talk about China a lot on this show because China, with all its people and economic potential, is such a big force and a big influence on our economy.
Think about that. What do they got? How many do they got over there? 2-3 million? How many people in China?
A lot more than us, I could tell you that.
Billions. They measure theirs
yeah.
in billions. We're like a
right.
third of a, we're less than a third of a billion in the U.S., and they're in the billions. A couple, I've forgotten what the number is, but think about unleashing, Joan, think about rolling back the wall and shining the light on, let's see, that would be six times, maybe six, to the U.S. to the sixth or seventh power. Think about that.
Right, and that makes retailers salivate.
Yeah, think about all. I mean, that's a lot of blue jeans and CDs, isn't it, Joan?
That's right.
and so that's the reason why, Joan, that you and I have been saying on the show. I've at least been saying. You've been here when I've said it. That China is an economic tsunami that still
yes.
hasn't completely. We still haven't seen the full magnitude of that economic tsunami.
That's right. Well, that's why I had said economic potential, because they definitely haven't reached it yet. Completely.
Well, but it's actually but and you guys point this out this week, it actually has the potential to be a two-edged sword, doesn't it?
Well, that's true. And you know that we want a strong China on the one hand, but on the other hand, we don't want them flooding our market with goods like as they are doing now.
Right, right. And that's one of the inequities of China entering the market. They're more of a producer state now than they are a consuming state in terms of the U.S. economy.
Right.
Now, 5-10 years from now, that could balance out and perhaps will balance out. In fact, some reports I've seen shows that it is balancing out a little bit right now, but it's still a little bit of a, we're still a kind of a donor state to them, aren't we?
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's the way the states think of themselves in terms of getting money from the government or paying money to the government. You know, are they a beneficiary or a donor state? You know, and we're
yeah.
that's kind of the way it looks. But what about the Chinese economy? Is it doing okay, or is it? You guys say that ask the question: is it headed for a meltdown?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because. I think in the press you would think, well, you know, China is moving right along. However, we refer to what we're calling its overheated lending environment.
Yeah.
And if that were to cause serious economic problems, that would reverberate throughout Asia, you know, starting with Japan, which is just, you know, still struggling to get back on
its
own feet.
They're still teetering over there.
But you still have some major other countries in Asia, including Indonesia and Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And Korea, many others, that would really be hit hard if China were to stumble.
I think the technical term is not all that technical, but the things that I've read about the Chinese capital markets is that it's a very inefficient capital market. And by that, they mean the best practices are not really all that good. The best practices are sort of not good practices. And also, they're not good at... eliminating bad debt. They're accumulating a lot of bad debt over there, not unlike what Japan did back in the 80s and 90s, Joan.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, I'm afraid.
You know, I had read recently that Japan has $1.3 trillion just in bad debt, uncollectible debt.
That's staggering.
That's more than a tenth of the U.S., the entire U.S. economy, $1.3 trillion in bad debt, and that's the kind of problem that's hurt Japan. And if China doesn't get their capital markets become more efficient and get more control over that, they could be headed in that direction. And now you talk about Japan, when you talk about what happened in Japan and you realize that could be happening in China, that's what I think the people would say, some of the talking heads would call Japan writ large.
Yeah.
Think about that.
And that's pretty scary.
Yeah, it is. But the question is can they help some of those things? And Joan, I'm not sure that they can, because they're still kind of holding off some of the management opportunities that and some of the sunlight that could be shined in over there. You know, when the VP went over there, Vice President Cheney went over there, they promised that his words would not be edited, but they were, weren't they?
They sure were, and I think I'm trying to remember what happened. They allowed it to be broadcast, but I think the whole speech wasn't subtitled or something. I mean,
right.
they did show it on TV, but I think when they published it in the paper, it was definitely edited.
Well, and maybe even subverted, maybe even reworded. So they've still got some problems. But I did read that some of their savvy technology folks actually were able to get the actual speech out on the internet. Did you read about that?
Oh, really? Well, see, and that's an interesting point, because you go back to the Tiananmen Square uprising,
right,
several years ago, and that was able to be facilitated by the fax machine.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the moral of that story is the truth will out somehow, and now people are using the internet. Even in a repressive society, there are technological tools now that
right.
can help democracy.
Right. One of the things that's happening that you guys pointed out is that one of the ways that they're going to try to cool the economy is by focusing on certain sectors like the steel industry and the auto industry, that sort of thing.
Yes.
And also they're talking to their banks about curbing the lending. Joan, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, folks, one of the big things that's going on right now that is affecting you as a consumer and perhaps as a small business owner is the exchange rate. And one of the world's exchange rate experts is Joan Pride. She's going to be, right, Joan? And she's going to explain to us when we come back about whether the yuan is going to be floating or not. Stay with us, 20 after. We're back. It's 23 after. Getting jiggy with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Right, Joan?
Oh, whatever you say,
our exchange rate expert, right, Joan? Okay, Joan.
Yes.
Right now, the Chinese, and folks, this is an important thing for you to understand as a consumer, but also as a small business owner, because in either directly or indirectly, this affects your business. Virtually every small business owner out there, and when we're, if not as a consumer, it'll affect your business. Joan, currently the yuan, the Chinese yuan, Y-U-A-N,
yes,
is pegged to the dollar. So as the dollar goes up, the yuan goes up. As the dollar comes down, the yuan goes down, meaning that we never get any kind of an advantage, any kind of an exchange rate advantage for our goods. European exchanges, European currencies, the euro, for example, is not pegged, so our currencies can float freely, and one year we'll have an advantage over them, the next year we won't have an advantage. But in China, they're like a shadow, aren't they? We can't get away from them. What's the story about the yuan floating free?
Well, and that's a real problem, because your currency should be reflecting what's going on in your economy.
Right.
So why should China's currency be reflecting what's going on in the U.S. economy?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. And we have really been jawboning China for quite a while to get them off our backs, and they've been very resistant. But we are now saying that Beijing will start letting the yuan rise slightly in value. They're not going to, it's not going to float freely, but by next year there's going to be a small revaluation, so that will help a little bit, but not. See, the thing is, they're not stupid. They want to continue flooding our market with cheap goods.
Right.
And the higher the yuan goes, the harder that will be to do.
Right. And exactly. As the yuan goes up, that means their goods are more expensive in our market and our goods are less expensive in their market. So the ideal situation in some ways would be, for at least for our exporters, Joan, it would be good news if the yuan would rise. This is what I've learned from Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen. She's taught me so well. If the yuan goes up, that means our exporters their products would be more competitive in China. But it would also mean that Chinese goods sold in America that consumers buy would be more expensive. Right?
If you say so.
Well, that's,
it works for me.
You've told us this over and over
again. I have? Gee.
You forgot that, didn't you?
I had no idea I knew all that stuff.
But, Joan, you know, one of the things that's going on that you guys report this week is that even with all the hand-wringing over all the things that China is doing to the global market, and they're not just affecting the U.S. Exporters, folks, they're impacting every single country on the planet,
yes.
Especially Mexico. I mean, I know of companies that went to Mexico 2 years ago, and now those goods are being made in China. I mean, they barely unpacked in Mexico before they went straight over to China. But but there are some companies that are cashing in on some industries that are cashing in on China, aren't they?
Well, that's right, and
the pharmaceuticals, the medical.
Yeah, makers and sellers of IT equipment and software, mm-hmm. pharmaceuticals, oil and gas equipment, auto parts, farm chemicals. That's very interesting.
Right, absolutely. Joan, let's move over and talk about something else. Let's talk about the overall U.S. economy. And you guys are saying that companies will gradually increase their spending. I'm sure you're thinking in terms of capital spending.
Right. You know, we had seen capital spending increase, and then we saw a dip in the first quarter of this year, which was a little worrisome because, as we've been saying for so long, that poor consumer that's been carrying the economy on his and her backs
right.
needs some relief and needs businesses to start spending more. And we also do say that consumer is going to start kind of slowing down by late summer.
Right.
So but we're still pretty optimistic about GDP, which we think will be about 4% growth all told this year. It's not going to be a straight 4% each quarter. It'll be up and down. But by the end of the year, you'll look back and see 4% for the year.
And even though I predicted that the year-to-date growth by December 31st would be 5%, I won't be disappointed if I'm wrong, Joan, because I think that your number of 4% is a nice, solid growth rate. If we can just keep that kind of steady all year long, that'll be nice and solid, a good sustainable rate to take into the next year.
That's an interesting way of getting out of being wrong, saying you're happy that you might be wrong.
Well, it just shows what a magnanimous individual I am, Joan. Also, you point out that the pace of housing sales will cool a little bit. Talk to us about that.
Yes, and we're not talking about bubbles bursting or anything like that.
No bubbles.
You know, right now you're probably seeing a scramble as people realize interest rates are going to be going up later in the year. So the buying is really going to heat up now, although I have to say in the Washington, D.C. area, it couldn't be heating up any more than it already has been.
Yeah. You guys are almost getting to it's almost getting a little scary there in the D.C. area, isn't it?
The stories would make your hair curl.
I've been hearing 20% numbers.
Well, and someone putting a house on the market and just having, you know, dozens of bids above the asking price.
Right.
There's just no stock on the market right now here.
Yeah, that's incredible. And now, folks, in most markets, that would be the law of the Newton's law of gravity would prevail in most markets. But Joan, I don't know what it would take for that to change in D.C. I mean, it's such an artificial economy with the government being right there.
That's right.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how that works. When we come back, we're going to talk about radio frequencies. This is very interesting, folks. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the week, but we're going to talk some more about that with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. 29 after. Stay with us.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thanks for hanging around with us today. It's good to be with you, and it's my pleasure to have you join us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, one of these days, and we talked about this a little bit earlier in the week with some the folks who produce the innovation series for PBS. You guys reported on this week. It was very timely that you did this, by the way. And that is that one of these days you'll be able to put all your groceries in your cart, shopping cart, and just walk by a little scanner and you know, slam bam, you're going to have your all your stuff will be calculated, and you'll be presented with a ticket to give them to swipe your credit card or maybe just to put in your PIN number. Maybe they've already got your credit card at the grocery store. And none of this taking the food out of the cab of the cart and putting it on the conveyor and having it swiped and then putting it in a bag and putting it back in. I mean, it's all going to be done automatic.
Well, we're sort of in a midpoint now. I don't know about where other folks live, but where I live, there are self-checkouts, but you have to take the stuff out of your cart
right.
And scan it yourself.
Right.
And one of the problems with that is they're reducing the number of cashiers in the stores where I go to. They have more self-checkouts than cashier checkouts. And you can bet that every time I go to try to do that, there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing freezes, and then a person has to come over and help. And I watch this people go through this all the time. So this hasn't been perfected yet.
Right.
Don't get me started.
There are a number of applications for this stuff. This is pretty cool stuff. It's called radio frequency ID identification, RFID. And what they're doing is they're putting in the item or in the package, they're putting a little chip, a little computer chip that identifies that product and gives it a value. And it's being developed by the people who created barcodes, Joan.
Right.
As you know, and so, but forget the grocery store for a minute and just think about a supply house that has lots and lots and lots of little SKUs out there. Stock keeping units in their warehouse, you know, they literally walk through the door with this little chip in it, and it registers the scanner picks it up and it registers in the computer that this is in the building, and when it goes out, it takes it out.
Gee, I'm ready for that.
Well, it's really an incredible way to make the stock keeping process much more efficient. And also the delivery to customers much more efficient.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool, isn't it?
I can't wait.
It's all kind of part of the nanotechnology movement that's going on right now. That we're going to be doing some more interviewing of some folks about that. We actually have met a guy who's written a book on the topic of nanotechnology. We'll be talking about that later. Joan, let's move completely over to page 3 and talk about some of the human resources things going on. This is a very interesting thing. Kiplinger reports that employers are now going to have more leeway in probing employee wrongdoing. If they've got an employee that's doing something wrong, we're going to get more leeway in investigating?
Right, and basically the point is that a new law that was passed eases privacy restrictions on employers. You know, that's kind of a sensitive area. But the idea is that they can hire an outside firm to look into maybe suspected theft or other problems in the workplace without
right.
getting prior consent of the employee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and is this part of the Homeland Security push, Joan, you think?
That I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Right. But this is a very important thing because companies need to be able, Joan, as you know, companies need to be able to protect themselves.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's not always so easy to find out whether the person that especially I would think in big cities where, you know, you have a lot of people looking for work and applying for jobs that nobody knows. They just moved
yeah.
into the area or something. Nobody knows them. No background at all. You don't know anything about them. when you understand that the workplace crime that's going on and the physical, you know, attacks that have been happening over the years, I would think that this would be something that would really benefit employers if they would do it.
Oh, I think so. That definitely.
Yeah. Joan, another thing that you guys point out is that states are going high tech with regard to checking out waste and fraud. Tell us about that.
That's right. We're talking about new software. And, of course, you think about all the programs that a state runs, everything from Medicaid to taxation to unemployment claims.
Right.
And
yeah.
There's plenty there that this software is going to be able to help.
Apparently, in several states, a combination of almost $2 billion has already been recovered from this software. So
yeah,
good for
amazing.
The states. Thumbs up there for the states going high tech. 22, we'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She's our good friend and longtime member of our Brain Trust. And Joan, let's talk about the Kiplinger website. I want to remind folks about that because that's an important site that I really encourage them to bookmark and to keep handy. And don't forget, you can also, in addition to some of the free stuff that's available, which is a lot of good stuff there at Kiplinger.com, you can also subscribe to their publications, which includes their weekly flagship document, which is the letter, the Kiplinger letter, and that's by email or electronically or in print, but delivered by the post office. And then they've got three biweekly letters, which is the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And they also have a monthly magazine. Joan, tell us about that one.
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
What's in that magazine?
Well, gosh, all sorts of things to help you invest better. Also, a lot of advice on things like retirement, college savings, things like that.
A lot of mutual fund information, too, isn't it?
Oh, no question, yeah.
A lot of that
and
stuff.
Stocks,
and,
right.
And, but basically, just your finances, not just investing, but managing your finances, even purchasing things like the consumer items, cars and clothes,
cars,
and things like
digital
that.
Digital cameras, all sorts of things like
all
that.
All that kind of stuff. And that's the monthly publication, folks, the magazine, and that's available also on newsstands. And they can subscribe at Kiplinger.com, which is just like it sounds, folks, Kiplinger. But they also got a phone number, right, Joan?
Right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And ask them for the Blassingame 30-day free trial. At first, they'll say, who? And then they'll give you the trial. Okay.
No, they would never do that.
30 days. Give it a try, folks. I think you'll like it. Joan, let's move over and talk about Iraq. What's going on in Iraq right now? We are less than 60 days away from the handover of the interim government, which is being headed up by Ambassador Brimmer. I'm sorry, I'll say his name in a minute. Brimmer, who's going to be literally. I've asked some people, some of my contacts on the ground in Baghdad. I've asked them this question: on July 1st, is he going to wake up and get on a plane and fly home? And they said yes.
Wow.
They said that when the sun rises on July 1st, 2004, the Iraq government, not security, but the Iraq government will be run by that provisional government.
And that's going to be an interesting situation because, of course, you're still going to have American troops in the country, but
yep.
the government won't be run by the Americans.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be an interesting little dance that they're going to do over there, isn't it, Joan?
That's a euphemistic way of putting it. Yeah,
which, as on a personal note, gives me a lot of anxiety because my son is one of the people who's in that security force.
Yes,
he's one of the Marines in Fallujah, and it, you know, the only thing that concerns me is the handover, and what kind of extra jeopardy those guys, those men and women are going to be in over there, the
right.
Americans that are going to be in over there. And you know, if there is any kind of a tough situation, which I think there probably will be, How will they handle that? And some people are saying that the UN ought to get back involved, Joan. Of course, to some degree they are, aren't they, with Mr. Brahimi?
Well, that's right. They are involved. And we kind of wrote a long piece kind of looking at this situation and asking, you know, does the United Nations have a magic bullet of its own? And we're answering no. You know, the UN wouldn't just sort of march in there and have it that much easier than the United States has.
Well, I think the UN situation over there is very problematic.
Yeah.
Because, number one, as you know, when their offices were bombed, maybe about 8 months ago, they got the heck out of Dodge. They loaded their rear ends on planes and they flew home, and which like a bunch of chickens. And I was really disappointed. And I'll tell you something else. The people that I know who knew the ambassador who was killed in that blast told me that he would have been very disappointed to know that happened.
Yeah.
That wasn't at all. He was a very courageous man. He was actually part of the solution, which is why they killed him.
That's right.
Because he was actually being effective as a UN administrator.
Exactly.
But now they've got Mr. Brahimi over there, Joan. And tell us about him. Tell us who he is.
Well, Lakhdar Brahimi is the UN special envoy.
Yeah.
And he's going to be really involved in this provisional government. And the idea is to show that it's not an instrument of U.S. policy. That's going to be key in this whole thing, in mm-hmm. this, you know, this handover that you're talking about on June 30th.
But he's an Arab, see, and he's got strong Arab background and strong Arab ties,
right?
And,
which I guess is designed to give him legitimate. Like he was selected to give an air of legitimacy to this whole operation.
But if he overplays his Arab hand, he's gonna tick off the Kurds, who are not Arabs.
Well, that's true.
And apparently he's already created one faux pas, Joan. He entered a meeting where all of the people in Iraq were represented, including the non-Arabs, and he said, welcome, or no, he said, hello, fellow Arabs, or something like that.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, it was a very...
Ooh, that's kind of stupid.
Well, where's the diplomacy in that? I mean, this guy's a professional diplomat basically just blew that deal.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, the idea right now with the oil for food program going on, and you're going to be glad that we're about to go to a break, Joan, so I don't get on my soapbox here too much. But this oil for food things, folks, please, if you're not paying attention to that, this is a very, very important issue that's being investigated right now. The oil for food scandal is going to become, I think, one of the big things. It's going to be a major piece of history. I'm convinced of that. And so from that standpoint, until this clears up, I'm really concerned about legitimacy and the UN being connected in any way. Tintail, stay right back with Joan Pride. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with us. It's my pleasure to be part of your day. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we've got Sam Norwood is going to join us. And we're going to be going over the most recent Tatum Partners economic survey that they conduct every month. And we're going to be doing that again with Sam Norwood. That's coming up in the next show. And a lot of other good stuff coming up, and I'll tell you about a little bit later on. Let's get back to Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about Joan. Oh, by the way, did I get enough? Did I get through with my soapbox on Iraq? Do you think I and the UN? Did
I thought you were just getting warmed up.
Would you like to hear more?
Sure.
Joan, one of the things that Kiplinger is going to be doing from now through the election, low these 6 months left in the election, I swear, I wish if I had the power, I would say, okay, elections, 30 days, period.
Let's just do it now.
You can only
it's
begin.
Be a long
it has
months.
To begin in October 1st, and it's over, you know, November 1st. You know.
And I'll tell you something, Jim. It's going to be a tight election, and anyone today who thinks they can predict the outcome is crazy.
No. You're right. You're exactly right. It's and I'll remind you what Steve Forbes said on this show when he was talking. He was quoting Prime Minister McMillan years ago when an aide asked him what's going to be the what's going to determine the election, and he said, "Events, my dear boy, events." And it's
exactly
the truth.
Right.
It's going to be, you know, all this polling means nothing right now, does it?
That's true. There's just so many variables at this point.
The economy looks like it's going to be doing okay. You know, who knows what's going to happen in Iraq? Who knows if we're going to have another terrorist attack? Who knows what could happen? But there'll be something. You're exactly right, Joan. There'll be something that will tip the scales one way or the other that will blow all the polling out of the water.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
It'll be useless. But speaking of that election, you guys are going to be covering the differences between the two prime candidates, Bush and Kerry. Between now and election, you guys are going to be giving. In fact, this week, you had a whole four-page coverage of the difference. Between now and the election, and that, folks, this was just a nice little add-on to their distribution. That was a nice little value added to my subscription. You guys are going to be doing this all the way through the election cycle, aren't you?
That's right. We're going to be doing other specials on other subjects, but we're going to keep coming back to the candidates, not always in a special supplement, sometimes in the letter, but watching very carefully what's going on.
Right. Joan, at the bottom of the first page of this coverage, you guys talk about the differences between the two candidates on tax policy, for example. You guys point out that if Kerry were elected, he'd have trouble getting some of his major tax changes pushed through.
Well, that's right, because what he's trying to do is save the country some money by repealing the Bush tax breaks for the upper classes.
Right.
But I don't see how a Republican-controlled Congress is going to buy that.
Right.
This doesn't seem to be in the cards.
Yeah, and I can see where you wouldn't like this, Joan, because this is going to raise your taxes, you being in the top 1% of wage earners in America.
You give everybody such a bad impression of me.
I would. That's not a bad impression. Listen, that we're all proud that you're a millionaire, Joan, that you're knocking down these big rock star bucks every year. And so I would think you wouldn't like having your taxes raised to 39.6%, Joan.
Well, if that were the case, that's right. I wouldn't. Theoretically, on a very theoretical basis.
But now, here's an interesting thing, and on this issue, I'm going to give Mr. Kerry some credit. You guys say that he might prevail on making health care premiums turn into tax credits for small businesses instead of tax deductions.
And that would come right off their income, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
really credit lowers their income right away.
A credit
dollar for dollar.
is 100%, yeah. Whereas a deduction is whatever, you know, only it's discounted by whatever tax rate you're in.
You pay. That's right.
Yeah. Over on page two of this analogy, Joan, here's an interesting thing, which will surprise no one, I think. You guys say that Bush, from an energy standpoint, Bush is going to push for more production, and Mr. Kerry is going to push for more conservation. Now, that's not news, is it?
Shocking, isn't it?
You guys really break some news here, don't you?
We sure do.
But the truth is, Joan, we kind of need to have an amalgam of both of those, don't we?
Well, that's true. You can't ignore the environment, but you can't let it stymie the economy either. So you do seem to kind of need some kind of middle ground. And depending on what political persuasion you are, will determine whether you believe that Bush is striking that middle ground right now.
We can't be naive about the Earthlings' dependence upon oil, Joan. People say,
right.
Oh, the war in Iraq is all about oil. Well, okay, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
In terms of the marketplace, Joan, as you know, the petroleum is to the marketplace what oxygen is to human beings, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, no question. Thanks, Joan. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We will see you next week.
Okay, I'll be there.
You can't wait, can you?
I can't wait.
Joe Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.